This is Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. Ever wonder what drives people to do what they do? Join me as I connect with a variety of people who have great stories to tell about what inspires them, ignites their passions, and leads them to make a difference in their work and the people around them. Here we go again, another day, another podcast. Today, my guest is Roussel Aroubail. Welcome, Roussel.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. I'm glad that we could find a time to connect because I'm really interested in hearing your story, your narrative. I know you from Twitter. I've been following you for a while, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to get to see you and meet you face to face when you did your TED talk here in Waterloo, Ontario. So I'm hoping that this brief connection will kind of make up for the fact that I didn't get to hear you speak live.
I hope so too. I'm really, honestly, thank you so much for asking me to talk with you tonight. And I'm so happy to know about your podcast. I will be checking out your other ones as well. And I'm just lucky to be here. Thank you.
No problem. So tell us a little bit about the work that you do in education.
I do a variety of things, and my role has kind of been very fluid for the past few years. It has changed a couple of times. I was a college professor at Seneca College 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and some changes happened in the college system. They got rid of contract faculty, and as a result, the system kind of pushed me out. I couldn't stay on working very few hours, and being a mom of two, that was really not something that I could do. So I decided to leave the college, leave teaching, something that I've been very passionate about my whole life. I still am. I love my students. I miss them dearly. But I decided to do what's best for me and my students, because if I were to stay in the college, then I felt like I would be doing an injustice to my students remaining in a system that doesn't provide me with the best learning conditions for them. So I left the college and I decided to focus on my professional development and as well being a stay-at-home mom to my two little girls. I focused on writing a lot. I did a lot of building communities at EduColor, at Edutopia. And right now, I recently went back to work. My role is I empower student voices and build communities at the Writing Project. So I'm doing that full-time now since my girls started school in September. So it's been very exciting changes throughout. And we'll see where things go from here.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us. You said a few things there that I'd like to hit upon, and I'm not even sure where to start. I think one of my first thoughts is that you're very brave to decide that you couldn't do what the college was offering you anymore, even though they had cut back, and that you left to benefit yourself and your students, which is a pretty neat perspective. And then I think that, when you talk about building communities, that's kind of when I think of you, that's what I think of. It's really neat because even though you're not a prof anymore, you're still, like, I would say that you're still educating in a big time way. Like when I look at your Twitter feed and I see the interaction that you're having with people, you're very out there and you're very open about the topics that you're addressing and, big on community, big on empowerment and big on voice. So that was really neat that's what I get from you without knowing you. And then as you were talking about your work, that comes out. before we started recording, you and I had just a like a brief chat about your name.
Yeah.
And I asked you if you could tell me how to properly pronounce your name. And so can you tell us a little bit about that? I just want you to talk about that so that people can hear, you know, how that comes to be.
Well, everyone, that's basically the first question that many people ask me, especially when they've met me online, they've been talking to me this whole time, and then finally they get to actually talk to me through voice or face-to-face, and so they say, "What? How do you pronounce your name?" So it's Rusal, but I was, it's really interesting being, when we arrived here to Canada, the way that my name is written is obviously it was kind of translated back home to R-U-S-U-L. So it's kind of that's not how it sounds like, right? And so it's really interesting that my students kind of struggled with the same thing. They would come from back home or, you know, their countries and their names are not written the way it should be pronounced, or you would think that they're pronounced. And so we kind of laugh about it, my students and I, because I know that feeling that, okay, somebody wrote your name, like that's not even how you pronounce it. But at the same time, I didn't want to change it because, you know, it's just, well, I grew up with that name, right? And so now it kind of becomes part of my identity. And I think I feel very passionate about people pronouncing each other's names correctly, just because it's part of our identities. And it also allows us, I feel, when you pronounce my name right, you connect with me more. So you're connecting with me on a personal level as opposed to just somebody that doesn't care about who you are. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. It's actually it's a pet peeve of mine. As a classroom teacher, one of the first things I do when I get my class list is go around to past teachers and find out exactly how to pronounce certain students' names. And it's a big deal for me because, similar to you, I mean, my name's Roland, so it's not that big of a deal. But my last name, Chidiac, has been butchered, you know, since I've been a kid.
Yeah.
And it's because people just don't know where it comes from and how to pronounce it, which is fair. Like, when people say my name and then ask me if they're saying it right, I appreciate that. And it comes from a place of authenticity. They don't know and they want to know. So I've always done my best to try to when I meet my students for the first time, to pronounce their names the way that they're meant to be pronounced. And, you know, our little chat before going on and listening to you now reminded me of a situation just that happened today in my class. So I teach grade 4 and 5, and I have a Syrian refugee in my class, and I'm fortunate to have taught him last year. So he came to Canada last February after having been out of Syria, back to Syria, into Lebanon, into Armenia. Like, the kid's life has been a roller coaster. So they finally get to Canada, and, you know, he comes to my room the first day, and it's February, right? It's freezing cold. This kid's not like experienced anything like this. But the kind of neat thing was that because I'm a Middle Eastern background, we hit it off right away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that was good. But so today, we were very fortunate to have you have a little friend with you.
Yeah, that's my cat.
Oh,
I thought you wouldn't be able to hear her. She joins me on every single phone call or podcast or Google Hangout.
What's your cat's name?
My cat name is Bissa, B-I-S-S-A.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome, Bissa. It's the first time I've ever had a cat on the podcast.
It's basically Kitty in Arabic. So.
Okay. Very cool. So today we had a retired colonel from the Canadian Armed Forces visit our classroom to talk about his work that he did over 30 years in the military and about his service to the country. Mm-hmm. And so as it was really cool because he chose to talk about some time that he spent in Afghanistan. And as he was showing pictures of his time in Afghanistan and talking about the different places, it'd be funny because my Syrian refugee student would raise his hand and would correct the colonel on the proper names of these places.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was a really cool experience because it was done in a very respectful way. Mm. And the colonel understood. The colonel actually, it was really neat. He had a lot of empathy for my student because here you have a soldier who is actually there in that part of the world, fighting evil, so to speak. And here you have this young man who has come from a war-torn area and is very proud of his heritage and very proud of who he is. And so it was really neat for me to step back and to watch these two people talk about something that they had in common in a really neat way, and they connected. And so talking to you, talking about how to pronounce the name, talking about that struggle, because you know what? It is. I mean, your name's different than what we're used to seeing here. I mean, it's getting, I would say, you know, Canada is really multicultural, and so people are starting to interact with other cultures. It's becoming a norm. And so as time goes on, like the students in my class, it will be normal when they're our age to see that there are different people that dress differently, have different names. Yeah. But there's still something about it that it causes a little bit of anxiety for me, because I want to make sure that I'm addressing people by their given names. Yeah. I don't want to change it or to manipulate it to serve my need. I want to make sure I honor them. So thank you for explaining that to us about, you know, how your name's pronounced and what that means to you. And I think you're right. I think it does add a connection piece.
Yeah, I think, I agree. I think it's so hard for teachers to, like you said, you go around and you ask students how to pronounce their names correctly. And I think, many teachers might feel uncomfortable to ask, kids to pronounce it like the second time or third time, but, it's necessary. I think it's something that we need to do just to get it right.
Yeah, you know, when I do it over and over again, I always tell my students, I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best to get the name. And is there something going on in my brain that's just not allowing me to grab it the first couple of times? So I do let them know that there may be a chance that I'm going to be doing this over and over and over again, but I am working on it and I truly want to get to know it. And I think when it comes from that place, I think then it's, because it's out there and we're trying to be as authentic as possible.
Yeah.
They just seem to get it and go with the flow. So,
yeah.
But I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's kind of like, I didn't know your story about having been a refugee. I didn't know it until, you were in Waterloo for your TEDx talk. And I remember watching a little bit of it. I was at home and I was watching the live stream, and I was blown away by your honesty, your candor, and the courage it took to stand in front of all those people and to stand in front of all the many other people who were watching it online and who would be seeing it later to tell your story. I would love to hear, first of all, I would love to hear a little bit about your story, but I'd also love to hear about what motivated or inspired you to get up and to tell your story.
Well, if you weren't the only one that hasn't heard about the story, it was actually something that not many people knew about, except they were obviously my close friends and family. And my students, I share my story with my students a lot because they can relate to me. But again, it doesn't come easy. It didn't come easy for me. And I actually didn't want to, at first I was hesitant because I didn't want to kind of, share my story in front of people that I don't know how to say this. So I didn't want to. There is something called. There is a word for it, but I don't want to use it at the moment. People like to look at or hear stories of underprivileged folks, and I didn't want to be that kind of a person standing there where privileged people hear my story and they kind of like pity me, or they, you know, it's not about them pitying me, being sympathetic towards my story. I shared my story because I wanted to get the message out there of the importance of connecting with your students, no matter who they are and where they come from, especially focusing on students of color and English language learners. So in a sense, it was really difficult for me to overcome that feeling of like, I don't want to be standing there telling my story and people will be feeling sorry for me. I don't want that feeling at all, right? I want them to, this is a horrible situation, but at the same time, I want them to focus on how they can take that story and create an impact, in their classroom, with their students. So it was difficult. And I think what inspired me to actually share it was, I had written about it for PBS NewsHour before, Andrew, who was the TEDx organizer, approached me and he said, I love your writing and it would be great. It's funny because we met in Philly at EduCon, and he's Canadian. So what are the odds that you meet a fellow Canadian educator in Philadelphia, but you haven't even met in Canada? So it was a small world for sure. He met me and he said, I love your talk. We talked about student voice in that session. And he just, he invited me to, tell my story at, TEDx Kitchener. So it took me a while for me to be like, okay, I feel brave enough to tell my story because I think that students can benefit from it. Teachers can benefit from it. And it's something to learn from. So I hope that was a message that many people got from the story. Again, I kept focusing about like not pity. Like this is not about a pity party. I don't want anyone just to feel sorry for me. I just want people to, you know, focus on equitable classroom practices with their students.
Right. Well, first of all, let's talk about Andrew. Andrew is a great guy who lives in Kitchener, and he's awesome. I would love to have him on the podcast. So hopefully after he hears this, you know, he'll be so excited to come on and to talk about the awesome work he does. Yeah. So Andrew's a great guy. No doubt about that. And about your story, but okay. So I get the part about you not wanting to be a pity party, and there's always going to be people, I would say, who are going to look at it that way, you know, the privileged who will sit there and listen to your story and, you know, think about what they can do to help, you know, the poor people that don't have everything they have. It's always going to be there. But again, your message.
Or even worse, like listening and then moving on, like moving right along with their day. That's worse to me than having someone being like, okay, I want to be a savior. You know what I mean? Like, well, savior complex is one of like my least favorite things. I feel like just being privileged enough to just move on with your day. That story is kind of something that also hurts too as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too. That's the one thing that I think bothers me about social media is that we're inundated with different messages all the time. And one of the things I struggle with is how do you read something or watch a video about someone who's doing something, and how do you harness that message into the life that you're living and into the way you're treating other people? That's hard because sometimes, well, I'm not going to speak for others. Sometimes I'm rushed and I see something that's emotional or that really tugs at my heartstrings, and it's like, I kind of feel the same way you do. If I just let it go and move forward, am I doing anything to help? Or am I hurting the situation? Like, so I struggle with that a little bit. So you've got me really thinking here on a Tuesday evening, which is good. But your message though, okay. So for me, the message was big. Like, here you are, you know, coming from another place and starting over. That's not easy for anyone in the best of circumstances. And so when your circumstances aren't ideal, I would say it's much more difficult, and there still can be as much trauma there as there is when you have to get up and move because of a negative situation. But for me, you see, I'm always kind of picking at motivation and inspiration. So I'm listening to your talk and I'm thinking, look at the amazing things you're doing. Look at the amazing attitude you have. What can I take from what you're saying and incorporate it into what I do so I can continue to move forward and help other people?
Yeah.
And, you know, your talk about empowering the voices of English language learners and minorities, it's like the student I was talking to you about earlier, there's something about working with him that really has me thinking about my job in a different way. And I've worked with students who have come from all over the place, but this one student, I don't know what it is. Maybe he reminds me of me when I was his age. Maybe that's the connection. Maybe it's the smell of his lunch when he takes it out and it's Arabic food and it brings me right back to my mom's kitchen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's something going on there that's causing me to really reflect on my practice with him. And it's like a heightened sense of what am I doing to assist in order to make sure that he fits in order to make sure that he's getting what he needs to succeed, just like I'm providing for all the other students in my class.
Yeah.
So you do raise a few good points there. But, you know, regardless of everything we've just talked about, for you to stand up in front of people and to tell the story alone is a big, big deal. And, you know, I feel honored, even though I don't know you, I feel honored that I get to watch that and I get to hear your narrative and other people get to as well. And I think that's the power of the TED Talks, right? There's a gold nugget in every talk. And it's like, are we aware enough to grab that nugget and to use it for good?
Thank you so much. I'm very humbled for all of that. And just so humbled that, you know, people just reach out and say that stuff is basically why I decided to do it. Just to hear that it resonated with people enough for them to kind of think about their students. It means the world to me.
You said earlier that, you know, you mentioned, where is it here? I wrote it down and I can't find it, but so I'm just going to ignore my paper. On your Twitter feed, you have the hashtag EduColor.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about where that came from and what it's for?
So EduColor is an inclusive collective that focuses on issues of race, culture, and ethnicity in education. We support teachers with resources, pedagogical practices, advice. We run a chat every month that focuses on issues of teachers, students, and parents of color. And we also have our website with a list of resources and just ways to connect with us personally and through our work as well. So EduColor has become... Well, it started off as a hashtag. The founder is Jose Vilson in New York. Started off as a hashtag, and now it's a movement. It's a movement that just basically focuses on people of color in education and how we can make intersections of equity, social justice, as well as teaching and learning. So it's something that I really feel strongly about. And is very near and dear to my heart. I'm on the advisory committee, and I encourage everyone to use the hashtag, check out the hashtag on Twitter, because a lot of the people that share the resources on the hashtag are actually sharing really useful resources to be used in the classroom, but as well to connect with the folks who are using these resources, because they're just so powerful, and you learn a lot from them by connecting with them.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that a lot of people are connecting with you to talk about these topics?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Ever since I joined EduColor, so many people reach out to me via DMs or on Twitter, or they find my website, and they just reach out. Many thank me, but a lot of them just reach out for help. They want to understand how to navigate issues of race, culture, ethnicity in the classroom. They have situations like you, where they have like a Syrian refugee student, or just a refugee student that has just arrived in their classroom, and they don't know how to help. They have students who come from very impoverished backgrounds, and they also don't know how to help. So they just reach out to kind of get help and resources and advice. And we're always more than happy when people reach out, because that's what it's about. We just want to kind of create awareness about these issues and how to navigate them in the classroom, because teachers don't get enough support when it comes to equity and justice training in teacher ed programs.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, have you received any backlash for the work that you do with EduColor?
I'm lucky in the sense that my first instinct is I thought about my college, and I wasn't part of EduColor when I was at the college. But I'm lucky in the sense that I don't belong to any organization that would kind of give me that kind of backlash. And I'm lucky that I am working at the Writing Project, a place that kind of celebrates these issues. Folks at Edutopia, they're always so supportive of my work. So the organizations I work for, no backlash, but from people, yes, definitely. I get it all the time on Twitter. I get trolls, your regular trolls. They call them trolls, but they're actual people behind accounts that say really hurtful things that are racist. I've had my fair share of backlash. But even aside from the racist comments, you get people that kind of, what's most hurtful is people questioning your experience. So you, like I tweet a lot, as you know, about my experience as being a woman of color, being a Muslim woman, and some people question that. They would say, well, there isn't any racism, for example, in so-and-so, or where have you experienced that? And maybe there was a reason for it. So stuff like that hurts me way more than if someone says something Islamophobic to me, because that person that's saying that is, they're a normal human being, but they think that this doesn't exist. And that's just hurtful, because it kind of diminishes you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I hear you talk about that, and it is a little bit upsetting to hear the comments people make and question your experience, or question, you know, the things that you may have experienced on your journey. It's almost like they're coming from a place that they can't understand what it's like to be spoken to in a certain way or treated in a certain way because of the way you might look or the way you might dress, mm-hmm. or the fact that you look like you're obviously from another place. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because I can understand your perspective, but as a minority male, I think my experience is probably a lot less severe than yours might be because you're a female. Would you agree that there's also that layer added on?
Oh yeah, for sure. And I have my husband to kind of vow for that. Is the fact that the funny thing is, I've been married for like more than, actually I think 11 years now, because we just passed our anniversary in September. So we've been married for 11 years, and when he married me, he said, So my husband doesn't really look like an Arab Muslim man, except for the beard. So he's not technically visible, but yeah, he is visible. You can tell he's different. He's not white, right? But at the same time, he said, "I didn't notice how many looks I get walking down the street until I married you." He said, "Wow, people just keep staring at us." And I said, "What? Really? I mean, yeah, that's normal, isn't it, for you?" And he said, "No, not to that extent." He said, "Literally, like, everybody stares at us when I'm with you." So that was kind of, you know, like a bit of a shock to me, because I didn't think that my experience was any different than, you know, anybody else. But like, I knew people stare at me, and I've experienced racism like on the street, but at the same time, I didn't think it would be different. But when he said that, I said, "Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't notice that." I mean, I didn't notice the fact that it's a lot of looks, a lot more than you get. So yeah, I think gender definitely plays a part there. Yeah.
I have to say, I've noticed lately, there have been a couple of things that have happened over the past few years. When I'm out with my boys, my wife is of German descent. So my boys have this interesting, they've got the olive skin color, but they've got the quote unquote white features. And so it's really neat to go places with them and to kind of observe other people, watch them, because I'm growing out my beard. So I've got this big black beard, and I'm not Muslim. So the first thing people think is I must be Muslim, because I look Arab and I have this big beard. And that's always interesting to me, the questions I get. What's really wacky is when I tell them that I'm a Catholic school teacher, then they're really confused. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it, but I'm going to, that I do have a lot of fun with that. I do play with that, because, you know, if you're going to come at me with that expectation, mm-hmm, or that general stereotype, then I'm going to play around with it a little bit, because I like to use humor to alleviate, I guess, tense situations, you could say. But I appreciate you sharing your perspective, because I don't hear enough about it. Like, I don't hang out with people that are Muslim. Like, I just don't have any Muslim friends at the moment. You know what I mean? Or if I do, they're on Facebook and they live far away, and I know them from high school. But right now in my world, in the culture that I'm experiencing as a classroom teacher in a Catholic system, I'm not truly exposed. I'm very sheltered, so to speak. So for me to hear your perspective is important, because, you know, what happens if I do get a student from another country, or even from this country, that are Muslim? You know, I'd like to have a point of reference, you know, to work with them and to not alienate them in the first 5 minutes that I meet them. So I do appreciate your perspective and the story that you shared about walking down the street with your husband and the way people look at you, or look at both of you. It kind of sucks that that's on your radar, and that you know.
And it's and I think, you know, you brought up a point. I think that's why it's so important to hear diverse stories, because it allows you to kind of get to know the culture, get to know who the people are behind those stereotypes, and kind of break down the barriers. If we keep hearing the same stories over and over again, then we'll never get rid of our, preconceived perceptions, or even fear and anxiety. We all have our implicit biases, right? But without hearing, like, this is why I think your podcast is important. And I think Roy Ann Lee also used to do, or I think he still does, like, blog posts by different educators. And he focused a lot on Ontario educators, but a lot of people of color as well. And I think it's so great to hear their stories, because you get to know them, as people, right?
Right. And I think once you know people as people, it changes your perspective.
Exactly.
You know, how could it not? Like when you talk about being married, having kids, having a cat, you know, working, helping people. Yeah. How can you not, you know, then see you differently if I didn't see you in an authentic way before? Like, I think that's the answer to a lot of these situations, these problematic situations, is people don't know other people. Yeah. And once you get to know them and get to hear their story, then it changes things. How could it not? I know for me, this whole, the US election over the past year has really like opened my eyes to racism, yeah, to bigotry, to sexism, just because, I mean, it's right out in front of us, right? This whole, and it is the US election that's really the two people who are in the middle of this this battle to be the president of the United States. They're like, they're exposed all the time, and you hear all these things that they're both saying. And for me, I'm reading reactions on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm hearing my friends say things that I would have never thought I'd hear them say. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, I want to know, like, I've known them for years, and then they say something that makes me feel like they truly don't understand the experience of people who have been treated differently for so long. And I wonder, why do they say that? Like, you know what? I questioned a few of them, and you know what they said to me? Yeah. They said something like, "Roland, we've never considered you to be a racial minority. We've known you forever. You listen to the same music. We played on the same hockey teams. We don't see you that way." And then my response was, well, what way is that?
Yeah.
Like, you'd come to my house and my house would smell different because of the food and the spices. And you saw, you know, how my parents did certain things at certain times. So how could you not see that I was different? And then they'd say it again. They're like, but you're not. We've always known you as who you are. And it comes right back to what you said, that they know me as a human. They know me as a person. They know my likes, my dislikes. They know, you know, how to push my buttons and how to make me feel better when I'm upset. And it's like, if everybody treated everybody else like that, I think that we'd be living in a much nicer world.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think the problem with people saying like, oh, I have a friend that, you know, you have to apply that lens to everybody. I think, the fact that you can empathize with, others who you do not know as well, I think that's really important. So they don't have to be your friends for you to know that they're not, bad people. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's complicated, but I think that being an open-minded person and empathetic is so important.
It's definitely a start, right?
Right.
Thanks for letting me go down that road. I feel like I hijacked the podcast. I'm going to go back to asking you some of the questions that I had written down that I was really interested in talking to you about. Can you tell us a little bit about your blog?
Yes. So I blog on my own website. It's www.ursulaarabel.com. It's called Heart of a Teacher. I titled The Heart of a Teacher because I thought that my heart will always be in the classroom with students, even if I'm not. So my heart will always be Heart of a Teacher. So I write on my blog a lot. I write on education, I write on teaching, learning, equity, social justice, and some just random thoughts that I have. And most of my posts are also have been previously published elsewhere, but I just drag and drop it on my blog. And I started it 2 years ago with the encouragement of many people on Twitter who saw me participating in chats, and they encouraged me to start my own blog. And here I am. I'd like to write more on it whenever I get a chance, but it's you need a lot of time, so I try.
Yeah, I know. I have a few blogs, and it's funny because I'll think of things that I want to write. You know, I'll be doing something, I'll say, oh, that's perfect, I'm going to write about that. And then it's like, where do I find the time to throw it in? I will make sure that in the podcast notes, I attach a link to your blog so that people can check it out. And I'll attach a link to your Twitter. But while we're on the subject, if people want to connect with you, are those the two best places to connect with you?
Yeah, my blog has my email address as well on my About Me page, and as well on Twitter. I use Twitter mostly a lot, so I don't check anything else, but I'm on Twitter. My notifications are off, though, believe it or not. But I do check it regularly, so people can connect with me there, and we can have a conversation.
Excellent. So I'll make sure that I include that, but I'm glad that we got to talk about it. I feel bad in some of my other podcasts, we've talked so deeply about certain things that I forgot to ask my guest how people can connect with them, even though I mentioned in the blog post. It's always nice because sometimes people don't read the blog. They just listen to the podcast, which is awesome. I don't mind at all, but it's good to double dip and to get them in both places. Yeah. I want to move now to like the final portion of what I like to do when I'm talking to a guest, and it's about motivation and inspiration. And basically, I would love to hear from you what you would say to someone, a teacher or just a person who approached you or connected with you on social media and said to you, you know, Roussel, I don't feel motivated. I don't feel inspired. What would you say to someone to help them find or to help somebody ignite their motivation or their inspiration?
There's a few things I would say to them. I think the first thing that I would say is to first find out why you feel this way. It could be an external factor, internal factor, meaning it could be the environment that's not making you feel motivated, or something inside of you that's making you feel not motivated. And so looking at the real reason, figuring it out, I think is really important. And the second thing I would say is to take a step back from whatever it is, the situation that you're in, if it's work or a problem that you're facing or something that, like writing, for example, if writing on your blog and you just don't feel motivated about it, about writing on your blog anymore, take a step back and take a break from it. And I think going back after some time can help you see things differently and get a different perspective. So yeah, I think the first thing is just figuring out the reason and then taking a break from it. And I know, I realize that taking a break from, for example, work is difficult. But I would say if there is a toxic environment, like something that I dealt with in the college a little bit, especially towards the end, take a step back from that. Do not go to, for example, the staff room if you feel like it's creating that negative energy and it's creating that demotivation. Don't talk to that person if that's the person that's causing the problem.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. So you've just added to, you know, 17 or 18 other people's ideas about how to motivate people who aren't feeling it. And I appreciate that. And now the people who listen to the podcast can take what you've said and hopefully remember that along the way if they ever feel like they're just not feeling it. You know, selfishly, I've kind of been feeling that way lately, feeling a little bit, not down, but just like not feeling the energy that I would like to feel in my classroom. And it was really neat because having spent this time talking to people about motivation and inspiration, you'd think that I'd be fine. And so I said to a friend at work, I explained, and he knows about the podcast, and I was telling him about, I was just kind of feeling like I didn't have the energy I needed to do the good work that I want to do. And he said to me something like, you know, you've had a bit of a tough start, and you're doing really exciting things outside of the classroom. And so maybe you're comparing the two, and it's really not fair to compare the two because they're two truly different things. Mm-hmm. And I really, like, he told me after, he was a little bit worried about explaining it that way because he thought I might take it the wrong way, but I didn't. What he said to me helped me just slow down and reflect on what's bringing me joy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought about, well, what can I do to take that thing that's bringing me joy and to kind of infuse it into my classroom? And so then I went into school the next day and I started talking to my kids about what I wanted to do, how I wanted to move forward, and whether they thought it was a good idea or not. And they loved it. And so then I started to feel the energy again.
Okay.
And so you just never know where it's going to come from. And I hope that when people listen to the podcast, they'll be able to take something from the guests along the way to help them with their journey. So once again, thank you. I have really appreciated your time. I'm so glad that I finally got to talk to you because I had never spoken to you before. So this is kind of the first time that we've had a chat. And I think it's been great. I think that getting to hear your story and getting to know you a little bit better will only strengthen my social media connection with you, which I'm really excited about. So thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. And that means so much, your compliments. And I agree with you that after this, the relationship is stronger because now we know a little bit more about each other. So thank you so much for sharing your story and for inviting me on tonight.
It was truly my pleasure, and I hope that you have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you. Take care.